Okay, you were talking about you were scared of things when you were a little boy, and
Yeah.
one day your dad took you to the cotton gin in Castorville
Yeah.
to get the cotton
Gin.
gin.
And he had me on the wagon when someone said, hollered, fire. And when there was fire in the building
At the cotton gin?
at the cotton gin in our bale that they were baling, that separating the sea lint from the sea,
Yeah.
and it was going into the press at the time. But my dad, Joe Burrows, was on the scale. They were exchanging corn for cornmeal or something, like we all did. And so my dad took me over to get handed me to Mr. Burrell and Mrs. Burrell, and that old man took off with that wagon or buckboard, and he never stopped until he crossed the river. And when he, I still remember that.
Now this all happened down where Landmark Inn is now. There
Yes,
was the cotton gin
that
below
was the
that.
cotton gin was at Landmark,
So he
and
went
also
across the river to the east, huh?
east. And when we crossed the river, he said, "Goddammer, Darius." His wife was named Teresa, so he said in German, "Goddammer, Darius, as brand." It was burning, you know.
Well, did the gin burn?
Yes.
Burn down? Oh,
No.
no.
But he meant there was fire
Yeah,
there. It's
yeah.
burning. Brand, I guess, in German was
Wonder what started that. Think somebody was
wire.
smoking?
A
Oh,
piece
wow.
of wire. They had some Mexicans picking cotton. And when they weighed the cotton, chances are there was a piece of wire. And it got in the,
Wheel or whatever.
or into the cotton bale, or the gin, and caused the fire.
Oh.
Anyway, when we crossed and when he said it burned, I was so excited that I don't remember exactly what happened. But when I got home, there were still flies around me. So you can imagine.
Okay, all right, we'll imagine. Now, who was running that cotton gin? Who owned that cotton gin at that time?
Joseph Curran owned
Curran.
that cotton. And the miller, or whatever you call him, I remember him well, was an old man, slim built, tall man, named Conover.
And he worked for Curran.
He worked for Curran at the mill, the first one I remember. The second one was Emil Halberdier. He operated the mill and the gin. And every time the farmers wanted cornmeal, why, they shell a bunch of corn for 10 pounds or so and exchange it for ground corn.
Oh, you take in your whole corn, and then they
And
would give you an equivalent amount of ground corn. Yeah, someone told me they remembered they used to take in the corn and they'd grind it for you, but after a while they would just exchange it rather than do, you wouldn't get your own corn back, in other
See,
words.
when I think when the mill was operated by the water wheel, that they could, you know, was running constantly if they were grinding something, so they just had their corn ground. But after they operated the mill by steam and later by diesel engine. Diesel engine was the first power that they brought to make electricity. That was done by J.T. Lawler when he.
Yeah, well, that was only in the 20s.
Yes, that was later on. But after they quit raising cotton around here, the boll weevil took over in this part of the country. and it was impossible to raise cotton. So
that happened all over the country.
Yes, and the gins just disappeared. There were gins at La Crosse, gins at Dunley, gins at Rio Medina. There were gins all over.
Did people make a good living off of the cotton before that?
Well, yes and no. The price of cotton in those days varied from about 9 cents up to the highest I remember was 14 cents.
But was it a profitable crop to grow then or not?
Well, in a way it was, because growing anything in the country
on dry farming
was a problem, because there were only certain people that could live on in the country, and they were the conservative people. They raised chickens.
Now, what do you mean by that? You mean because they were self-sustaining and they raised all their own stuff?
Sure. They went to the store, they sold a chicken, they sold eggs.
In exchange for flour and sugar and coffee.
In place of using cash. Yeah. They didn't have no cash.
Yeah.
And the value of things coming off of the farm and ranch, it was almost impossible to realize a profit.
Yeah. And then, in other words, the things you took into the stores, then they would sell to the people who lived in town, huh,
sure,
that didn't have chickens.
And that same thing they're trying to do today, they say.
They're going back to it.
if the people would exchange things amongst each other, you know, or if people would work, you know, at home and sell some.
Yeah.
The ladies that are not employed could make quilts and different things.
Of course, all it is changing a lifestyle, because in those days you spent your entire life doing that, so you never got to do too much else.
No.
Nowadays people are involved.
Well, we had different people. They come from a conservative country where everybody was brought up that was the only way that people ever could exist in other countries.
You think that's why the Alsatians survived this area then?
Why, sure.
Because
they and the Germans.
Uh-huh. They knew how to live on the land and do with nothing.
Live on the land and off the land.
Yeah, and do with nothing if they had.
Like
it.
Someday you're going to find people going out of the city in place of trying to retire in a city, because it's going to be impossible for anyone to live on Social Security or other. As inflation continues, it's just eating the old people up.
Well, when you think back about your growing up, did you feel like you were well off, or did you feel like you were poor, or how did you feel about your family? Were they well off?
We were just independent, that we were surviving on something that was growing slow. But during all my lifetime, I worked as a farm and ranch. Mm-hmm. And as this inflation continued up to a certain point, the amount of property that I owned was worth $1 million. Not actually $1 million. That's $1 million with a 36 cent dollar. See, that's the difference.
Oh, I see.
In those days, a dollar had purchasing power.
Yeah.
Today it has the purchasing power equal to about 36 cents.
Okay.
So if you got $1 million today, why, you're actually only worth $100,000. The other is no value. You can't buy it.
Well, when did you get married, Mr. Jay?
I got married September the 12th. No, May the 12th.
September was your birthday.
Yeah. May the 12th.
In what year?
1924.
And then how many children did you have?
I had two children.
Well, who was your wife, first time?
My wife was...
Or is. She's still living. We don't want to talk about her.
She's Celine Schott, daughter of Joseph Schott. I don't even remember her name.
Her mother's name? Yeah. Who her mother was? Well, we'll ask her later. Yeah. Okay, and your children then were... Who were your children?
The oldest child was born in 1925. He was Calvin Gage. And he, at the age of 19, he fell out of a pecan tree and died. In 27, my second son was born, or our second son, and he lived.
That's his name is?
Melvin Gage. He's still living, but he became ill in 1971. And since that, he has been an invalid. He has multiple sclerosis or whatever you call it. I've got a different name for it, but I can't tell it. But it shouldn't be.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's really too bad. Melvin's gotten that. He was so young yet.
Yeah.
But I still remember when
Calvin died.
That's
all in life, you know. Mm-hmm. There's good things happen in life and bad things.
And you have to learn to take
You have them. To learn to live with them.
Well, just talking to you, it just seems to me like even though whatever's happened to you, you seem to have accepted life and enjoyed it.
Oh,
to the fullest.
Of course, I could have enjoyed it a whole lot more if things would be better. But that's life for most people.
Yeah. Okay, when you got married then, did you move to a different piece of land, or was this land a part of your dad's ranch?
Yes.
It was part? Did he give you this part?
Yes, this part where I built my house in 1924 still belonged to my dad, but was willed to me. And in the will, it was specified where it was, which I think most people should do to avoid
Fights between the kids.
Yeah, and losing the property. But anyway, I must say that my dad really done the right thing.
Well, did he give each child some land then?
Yeah, each one. Uh-huh. That their part. There was never a word said after he passed away. Everybody was happy. But they knew what they were getting, and that was it.
Well, something my dad has always said, and he said it to me at least four times, that two of the nicest people that he ever knew in this world were Almond and Caroline Jaggi. He said they were absolutely the finest people he ever knew. Everybody loved to go to your dad's ranch.
Yeah.
There was always boys there, weren't there?
There was always boys.
And then with Fred the same way, everybody went to Fred's.
Then. Everybody loved Fred. Because at one time, a certain party's name was mentioned that he mustn't have a friend, that certain party.
Yeah.
Fred kind of smiled and said, sure, he's got a friend. And one of the guys, Wilfred Werner and some others at an auction, said, oh, well, you're everybody's friend. And that's the way. Fred always said, if you can't say anything good about somebody, don't say anything at all.
Yeah, he was a happy guy.
He was, in a way, more a comedian than anything else.
Yeah.
He was like old Jack Benny and different people. Because there's a little story that Fred told one day when he went to a funeral at Castaway. And Fred was driving an old truck. It would break down, and he'd had to walk 3 miles sometimes. And he was driving about that, And your daddy was there, and Gabe Hans and a bunch of other. And he was telling, he said, that darn old truck quit on me out of the back end at the wind well, and I had to walk all the way to the house. And I don't know if Gabe or if it was Blackie who said, Fred, how come you drive a truck like you're driving when you could afford any kind of truck? And Fred, he said, well, like Ronald Reagan says, well, he says, I'll tell you one thing. You whole bunch here, there's a bunch of us. I could buy a new truck, and I could buy a new truck for each one of you, but I damn sure ain't going to do it. And that was Fred, you know.
He just did with what he had, huh? Yeah. Well, he was he tight?
No.
He wasn't tight?
Oh, he was tight like all the Jaggies were, because if he hadn't have been tight, he wouldn't.
Held on to the land.
Because he died a millionaire. His property was actually worth $1 million after inflation. Not yeah. before.
After inflation. After inflation, yeah. Okay.
But anyway, Fred was an individual. Yeah. There's no question. He was an individual when he was at home. When he was a kid.
In the family, you mean.
He was, my dad was strict with all the boys, but he never could tell Fred to do it.
Fred got away with it, huh?
Oh, yeah. Fred would take off and leave for several days and come back. Well, all Fred done when he was a boy there was ride wild horses. That was his business. He made a living that way. Of course, another thing that happened as we go on, I want to tell a little story about Fred, because when Fred was seeing the girls, why, he was dating a girl in Castorville. She was a Chrysler, Viola Chrysler, and he had been dating her and all the other girls around here. So finally his sister married Ferner from
May.
Jaggy married a Ferner.
Uh-huh.
And so he visited out there. And Ed Ferner had a sister. Her name was Cecil, which he later married this girl at the same time he was dating all the others. And so one day he was putting a saddle on a wild horse in the big corral or pen, and his older brother Phil was helping him. And so Phil was in the mercantile business. He was married then. No, before he was married, he was in the mercantile business. So Fred, out of no place, said, you know, Phil, he says, and I was sitting on the fence. I was just a young boy. He says, I'm going to get married. So Phil says, you get married? He says, you don't have a dollar. He says, I know it. He says, how are you going to support a wife? He says, well, like Reagan says, well, she's got $1,800 cash she inherited from, and this is just what happened. She inherited $1,800, and I love that woman.
You mean to say that Fred married Cecil for her money?
No.
Fred
married Cecil for the money she had, regardless where it come from. You know. No, he really, they were the most devoted, most lovable couple I ever seen.
Well, and I must say he married a hard worker, too.
Oh, there's not another one like
it. No, I believe he's a worker.
Another thing, this story is getting too darn long, but I just can't leave this part out. So, after they got married, moved to the ranch, and my dad and I would spend the weekend there. We'd be up at the ranch and come back. And they were two lovebirds. Oh,
Cecil and Fred.
Cecil and Fred.
Uh-huh, okay.
So they were farming there, and they were supposed to walk behind a drag, you know, to level the land. So they was pretty smart. Fred had a beautiful buggy, you know, and a fancy horse. And he'd wash him that buggy before he went out, you know. But that was something special. So it had an umbrella on it. And Fred and Cecil just married, you know. And he said, Sweetness, that's what he called her. Sweetness, he said, I've got an idea, he said. I'm going to hitch the horses on that buggy, he said. It's got an umbrella on it, and you go with me. We worked the field together. And my dad seen that. He told Fred's wife, he said, Cecil, if you and Fred keep doing what you're doing now for 1 year, he says, I'll buy you a silk dress, and you can pick it out, which regardless what it costs, if you can keep doing what you're doing now. And they did, you know. I never seen a couple that were more in love than they were.
Oh, really?